The National Catholic Educational Association 2024 convention is coming up soon. All Catholic school educators, administrators, and leaders are welcome to join us in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on April 2nd through 4th, 2024 for Together in Pittsburgh, Connections, Commitment, and Community. The largest Catholic education convention has it all, with breakout sessions, liturgies, special events, and a keynote by Steve Angrisano. Register using the link in the show notes. We can't wait to welcome you to Pittsburgh.
From the McGrath Institute for Church Life and OSV Podcast, this is Church Life Today. I'm Leonard DiLorenzo. In a previous episode with my guest today, Josh McManaway, we were talking about the Apostles' Creed, which he is writing a book on for the sake of interested Catholics, for seminarians who are learning how to preach, and for all of us to more deeply understand the faith that we profess. In this episode, we're going to focus on a very particular part of the Apostles' Creed, a very curious part, in fact, the name Pontius Pilate. Why is Pontius Pilate's name in the Creed? We'll start by asking Josh about this and then follow the path down a couple of different theories and have him guide us into what he thinks is plausible and not plausible in terms of this name making its way into the Creed. Let's get to it. All right, Josh, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for coming back. So we're following up on previous episode where we started talking about the Creed, a project you're working on. We talked in our previous one. I should eventually number our episode so I can say what number it is. I will do that. I've just been reluctant to do it or lazy in doing it for, like, I don't know, 5 years now. I'll do it eventually.
Anyway, why start now?
So in a previous episode with Josh McManaway, we talked about the Apostles' Creed, and we really focused on the beginning of that creed. I believe in God, the Father Almighty. But today we're talking about something that is comparatively much smaller in the creed, and maybe we've never thought about the peculiarity of this, the name Pontius Pilate.
Yeah,
it's just part of the creed. We just say it. So let's start here. Why is this weird?
Yeah, this was the question that kind of stands at the origin of the book project.
Why is this weird?
Why is Pontius Pilate in the creed?
Yeah.
Because it, on the one hand, the repetition, you know, you say his name every Sunday, so it doesn't seem like a big deal. And he shows up in the Gospels at the, you know, at the execution of Jesus.
The guy's name has been said billions of times.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. In the history of the world.
Yes, right? That's right. That's right. And so, you know, well, surely, I mean, why not? You know, but I think if you ask the question, well, why is he in there though? There are so many other people that I would think would have kind of priority. You know, why not the 12 apostles?
Any of them,
right? Yeah. If you can't list all 12, because that would get a little long, maybe at least St. Peter, who stands at the head of the 12 apostles, or Paul, who authored so much of the New Testament. And so this question about why a kind of middling Roman bureaucrat finds his way into the central profession of Christianity was the origin, in fact, of the book. I mean, I gave a paper on this at a conference years ago, organized by our own Nathan Eubank, who teaches New Testament here at Notre Dame, and Marcus Bachmuhl, who teaches New Testament at Oxford. I was a kind of late addition to this conference on the Bible and the Creed.
They're like, you do Pontius Pilate.
Yeah, here's what's left over, you know? And so I realized that, yeah, not a lot had been written on this, and what had been written on it said basically the same thing. Mm-hmm. But as I started to read the explanations, I thought, no, these are insufficient. And so I wanted to kind of dig in more and figure out why. And I came up with what I think is a kind of novel theory, but we can talk about that in a little bit if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just for people who are trying to, like, recite the creed in their head right now, it's like, is anybody else listed in the creed? So the historical persons, there's Jesus.
Yes,
historical
that's right.
Person. There's Mary.
Mary.
And there's Pontius Pilate.
And that's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now, since you've done this research into, like, trying to figure out, like, how did Pontius Pilate get in the creed, my understanding from following what you wrote and spoke on is that maybe the most prevalent explanation is that, oh, this is the way to historically date
Jesus, right? Like
that's
you
right.
tie it to Pontius Pilate. Tell us about that.
Yeah.
Give us the best version of that, because I know you don't find it convincing.
But I don't find it convincing, but this is the line that's been repeated since the 4th and 5th century. So you find this explanation in Rufinus of Aquileia's commentary on the Apostles' Creed, which mm-hmm. I mentioned in our last episode. He says, yeah, look, Pontius Pilate is there to secure the date of the crucifixion. Augustine repeats this. Other Latin authors repeat this line. In modernity, J.N.D. Kelly, an Anglican historian of early Christianity, probably one of the premier historians of the early yeah. church of the 20th century, Kelly, and especially of the creeds, his book on early Christian creeds remains one of the standard works. But he says much the same thing. He really has it out for Rufinus. He doesn't like him, but he says, at least he got this right. This is the reason Pontius Pilate is in the creed in order to secure the date. And this seems reasonable enough, right? It kind of grounds Jesus historically and links him to a known or allegedly known historical figure. And so mm-hmm. we can date the crucifixion thereby. I find this kind of skeptical because of who Pilate is. When I have described this to other people, I've said it would be kind of like dating something in 2016 according to the mayoralship, the mayorship of Pete Buttigieg,
yeah.
you know, which like all of us in South Bend would know,
mm-hmm.
right? But who in California would be able to date anything according to
back
when
in 2016,
Pete Buttigieg yeah, was mayor, right? And so Pontius Pilate is that kind of level of bureaucrat.
Who never ran for president.
He was never the Secretary of Transportation for the Roman Empire. he's kind of a middling bureaucrat. The fact that he was working out in Judea probably says that he was not exactly high up on the list of the emperor's favorites.
Mm.
Judea was not like the sweet appointment. It's the kind of backwater on the eastern edge of the empire that acts as a kind of buffer zone for the Persians.
Mm.
So this is not like the choice assignment that you would want to go for. Okay, so he's this middling guy. And then I started reading what people in antiquity actually said about Pilate, and they seem to know basically nothing about him. We don't really know where he comes from. We don't know much about his career prior to Judea. We don't know what happens to him after he leaves Judea. We're not even sure how he dies. And so I thought, this is the guy that we're using to date the crucifixion, a guy about whom we know very little. And the real kind of killer piece of evidence for me was Irenaeus of Lyon. So he's a church father in the late 2nd century. He's the bishop of a town now in France called Lyon. And he writes this great work against heresies in 5 books. But he gets it wrong. When he talks about Pilate, he thinks that Pilate served under the reign of Claudius, who was emperor from 41 to 54. Pilate was dead by the time Claudius came along, and Jesus was certainly dead by the time Claudius came along. And I thought, if Irenaeus can move Pilate like that, you know, across history, then what grounds do we have for thinking that he actually grounds anyone historically? He himself is able to kind of be moved like, oh, when did he serve? Under Tiberius or under Claudius?
Yeah.
Whereas Irenaeus could never have tried to move Tiberius's reign. So Tiberius was the emperor when Pilate was serving and when Jesus was crucified. Tiberius dies in 37. You could never, everyone would have known, right? That would have been like presidential history levels. So if I tried to say like, yeah, JFK, he was president in the 1990s, people would say, no.
Yeah.
No, we know that's not true.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, when was Pete Buttigieg mayor? Sometime in this kind of, you know, he's a little more murky. And so Pilate is basically that kind of level. So it did not seem to me that you could use Pilate to kind of, to ground Jesus's crucifixion in history in a kind of precise way, because so many people in antiquity, both Romans and Christians, did not even really understand who he was or when he reigned, or, you know, he's just not that big of a deal.
We should, it occurs to me, we should just stop our conversation now. And so everybody listening, they're like, so what is the reason? And we just leave it hanging.
Read the book, I guess.
You had to read the book. Yeah.
The National Catholic Educational Association 2024 convention is coming up soon. All Catholic school educators, administrators, and leaders are welcome to join us in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on April 2nd through 4th, 2024 for Together in Pittsburgh, Connections, Commitment, and Community. The largest Catholic education convention has it all, with breakout sessions, liturgies, special events, and a keynote by Steve Angrisano. Register using the link in the show notes. We can't wait to welcome you to Pittsburgh.
This is Leonard DiLorenzo. You're listening to Church Life Today. Josh McManaway is with me. He's my colleague here in the McGrath Institute for Church Life. He's working on a book on the Apostles' Creed. And we're continuing a conversation about the creed. And now we're focusing on the line about Pontius Pilate. Why is it there? So that's theory number one, which you have dismissed. It doesn't hold. It's not strong enough to be the reason why
that's right.
Pontius Pilate's in there. And as you said, Pontius Pilate, who is a middling bureaucrat, he can be moved around. Like, he doesn't actually lock up or ground anything. Tiberius Caesar would.
Yes.
But Pontius Pilate doesn't.
Yep.
So you come to a second sort of theory that's out there that you really helped to develop, that this is part of an anti-docetic move.
That's
Tell
right.
us about that.
So the docetists, which are a group of people in early Christianity who thought that Jesus only seemed to have a body. So dokeo in Greek means to seem. Mm-hmm. The docetists are those who thought that Jesus only seemed to have a physical body, but really he was a spirit walking around kind of teaching us the truths about
like the
God.
Christ was not.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right.
And for people listening now, like, that sounds weird. You're like, well, you know, nobody would think that. But when you gaze upon the dead body of Jesus at the foot of Mary under the cross, and you have to say that is the Son of God.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yes,
that's where this comes from. It is
totally
a challenge. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the scandal of Christianity is really shown in this as a kind of foil.
Mm-hmm.
You can either accept the truth of Christianity, which is that God loves you so much, he took up your human nature, lived a life, was crucified, died, resurrected, and ascended. Or you can say, like, well, God is so dignified, he could never have done those terrible things.
But
like
he
being
wants
born.
To give us
yeah, he
the
wants to give us wisdom.
Yeah.
He wants to like teach us these, you know, eternal truths or something. It's far less messy. It's far more noble. Yeah. So the docetists, they thought, well, you know, he doesn't have a real body. And one of the ways to kind of show that someone has a real body is that they are crucified. Crucifixion is a guarantee that that's a real body up there. And it's a horrible, horrible instrument of death. You were not allowed as a Roman citizen to be crucified in the Roman Empire. It was a punishment reserved for slaves, for subjects. So Jesus of Nazareth would have been a subject of the Roman Empire, but not a citizen. Paul was a citizen. That's why he got to be beheaded. But Peter was a subject. That's why he was crucified. It basically marked you as a non-entity, you know, to be crucified. It meant you were less than nothing. You weren't a real person. And so one of our earliest Christian authors, a guy by the name of Ignatius of Antioch, is disputing with some of these docetists in some of his letters. And three times in three of his different letters, he mentions Pontius Pilate. And he does so with a kind of specifically anti-docetist lean. You know, he's saying, you guys deny that he had a body. I'll prove to you he had a body because he was actually crucified under a real Roman kind of governor. Under a real Roman official, this guy named Pontius Pilate. And so he's not trying to secure the time, right? The docetists are not saying, we're not sure when Jesus got crucified. They're saying, we're not sure that Jesus got crucified.
That it was really the Son of God, or what you're saying, the Christ.
Yes.
Somebody did, but it wasn't God.
Yeah. And he's saying, no, it was God. And it's a real crucifixion in a real body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who got crucified. And so His use of crucified under Pontius Pilate, this phrase, is used to kind of go against the docetist in the early second century. Okay, this is a much more sound theory for why it eventually makes its way into the creed, except that the very next kind of line of authors that we have who pick up this phrase, crucified under Pontius Pilate. People like Justin Martyr, writing in Rome in the mid-150s.
About 50 years after
Ignatius somewhere thereabout, right. Mm-hmm. And Ignatius of Antioch, I should say, is writing these letters that we have while he is en route from Antioch in the Middle East over to Rome in order to be martyred.
Mm-hmm.
So that the Roman church would have had a collection of his letters seems plausible to me, that he would have had a copy of the letters that he sent out and that those would have been at the Roman church. So Justin Martyr writing maybe 50-ish years later could have had, you know, Ignatius's letters. And now he uses the phrase crucified under Pontius Pilate, but never in an anti-Docetist way, ever.
How does he use it?
He kind of uses it as this like pious epithet. Mm. I liken it to the way that Muslims, when they speak of Muhammad, will say peace be upon him, almost kind of reflexively.
Mm.
You know, it's this immediate kind of thing that you say as a title, as a pious epithet. And so there are many instances in Justin's letters or in his writings where he'll say, Jesus Christ, who was crucified under Pontius Pilate, but he's not making an argument about the reality of the crucifixion. He's not making an argument about the timing of the crucifixion. It just kind of plops in.
Hmm.
You know, it would be like if every time I talked about you, I said, you know, Lenny DiLorenzo, that really good looking guy that I work with.
As you should say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, but even if we're not having a discussion that pertains to that, it would be a kind of awkward phrase to work in. And that's kind of how it sits in Justin. And when I started writing this, I thought that's odd. The way that Justin invokes this phrase is different from how Ignatius invokes the phrase.
Hmm.
So I started to kind of tease that out a little.
Does anybody else use it the way Ignatius used it?
No, it drops off.
So Ignatius, one of the first to employ this mm-hmm. term.
Yep.
And then you find it again in Justin.
Yep.
And then you find it in others.
In Irenaeus.
Okay.
Yep.
But as you're saying, you know, prior, when Ignatius used it, it was against the Docetists, and
That's
it
right.
was in order to secure the real humanity of mm-hmm. Christ. But thereafter, it's formulaic. They just say it.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got it now popping up 50 years after Ignatius of Antioch in Justin Martyr and others as a formula. How does it then move from there into something like our creed?
Yeah. So Justin, when he uses the phrase, in several times he talks about the efficacy of exorcisms done by in the name of Jesus Christ, who was crucified under Pontius Pilate.
Hmm.
And scholars of kind of early Christian liturgy and those who study these kinds of things say, yeah, it seems like what Justin is giving us is an insight into the verbiage of early Christian exorcisms. He's giving us insight into the actual phrases that were used in Rome, mid-second century. And so you can imagine how, yeah, people who were being exorcised, exorcised, not exorcised. I mean, whether they lifted weights, I don't know, but these people who were being exorcised, the exorcisms were being performed in this name. Moving ahead just a little bit, we start to see exorcism and baptism kind of theologically linked. Okay, this idea that baptism releases you from the powers of the king of this world
mm-hmm.
and inaugurates your fidelity to the one true God,
yeah.
The God of Israel. And exorcism is part and parcel of that, especially for adult converts. So you would have had this kind of exorcistic ritual prior to your baptism.
And taking off the old way of life that you were in league with.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And that as you were being baptized, as we mentioned in the previous episode that we did, you were asked a series of questions. Do you believe in God the Father, et cetera, et cetera? So my theory is that as kind of exorcism and as baptism came to be more closely wed together with one another, that phrases from this kind of exorcism find its way into the baptismal liturgy, and that the baptismal liturgy, then those phrases also find their way into the kind of declaratory creeds.
Yeah. And for people who are listening and you're thinking like, well, exorcisms were a thing of the past. Actually, exorcisms happen all the time
sure.
now. Actually, at every baptism, there's a minor exorcism, as you
That's
said,
right?
Right? Like, and oftentimes these come in a series of questions. Do you reject Satan and all of his anti-show and all of his empty promises?
Yeah.
So oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes it's three questions mm-hmm. where you denounce, and then you have the three questions where you profess.
Yes.
Right? Like you have to drive out the old stuff first. So as you're saying, like the connection between exorcism and baptism, and Pontius Pilate basically rides the exorcism wave into the waters of baptism.
Totally.
And, you know, it seems like very compelling the way you're tracing this in terms of like trying to figure out like how did Pontius Pilate make his way into the creed, because by the time Justin Martyr is writing, as you're saying, it's formulaic and people just stop thinking about it.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
It's just part of what is said.
Yes.
How strong? So strong that it becomes part of the baptismal rite and part of the creed that we profess.
Yeah. That's right. And specifically, it becomes a part of this Western kind of Roman creed that will eventually develop into the Apostles' Creed. The phrase about crucified under Pontius Pilate is missing from a lot of Eastern creedal statements, mm-hmm. and in fact is missing from the original Nicene Creed in 325. Mm. So the Nicene Creed that we typically know of comes in a reformed version from 381, the Council of Constantinople. So about 50 years later, they were right. like, we have to update this a little
yeah,
bit.
Because it's like, we believe in the Holy Spirit, and that was it.
That was
there
it.
Was literally yes. nothing after yeah. that. Yeah,
yeah. The Holy Spirit in the history of theology always gets short shrift.
Yes, yeah.
Even
in
today.
Fact, not going to be part of your book. Just know it no, will it okay. will be.
The chapter on that will be 5 pages.
Yes.
This shows, I think it lends support to my idea that this comes out of a kind of Roman exorcistic context, because we don't find that phrase in the original kind of Nicene Creed, but we do find it early on in the Apostles' Creed.
Yeah. Are there other phrases, terms like that, that aren't there in some of these other creeds that get attached to the Apostles' Creed? I mean, I know one, which is the Communion of Saints.
The Communion of Saints.
So I wrote my dissertation on that, but
yeah. The descent.
The descent into hell
right. is the other one.
Yeah.
That's, it's very Western. It's more universal, than just the Roman creed. And the idea of the descent into hell, is certainly not just Western. You find it in Greek authors. You find it in Syriac speaking authors.
Mm.
There's a whole genre of Syriac being a dialect of Aramaic that many Eastern Christians spoke and still speak, like Maronite Christians. But there's this whole genre in Syriac. In Syriac, they're called sugiyoto. They're dialogue poems where Jesus goes down into hell to harrow it, to save the souls there. And Satan and death will have a conversation back and forth.
Satan and death?
Yeah, in these dialogue poems. They'll talk back and forth about who is this guy?
Yeah.
And, or
people are thinking this is their in-laws now. Not mine, but other people. My in-laws are nothing like that. I love my in-laws.
Yeah, they go back and forth about who is this Jesus guy, or in some of them, they know who Jesus is, and Satan and death are having a competition over who's better, you know, because death is like, well, I got him down here, and Satan's like, well, this is my kingdom. You know, it's really interesting. So this idea of the harrowing of hell, the descent into hell, is all across the patristic record, but it really only, you know, shows, it doesn't show up in the Nicene Creed. It does show up, for us in the Apostles' Creed.
Yeah. We're going to do a whole episode on that eventually.
I think we have to.
Okay. We will. Yeah. We'll give you time to get to that. So, you know, there was, I suppose I should bring up this question just to prove to you that I read the footnotes of your paper too.
Oh, wow.
But there was, I know. Footnote number 6, if you will. But I was kind of interested in this because it wasn't familiar to me. You were talking about, this wasn't part of like your paper on Pontius mm-hmm. Pilate in the Apostles' Creed. It was an aside, which is why it was a footnote.
Yeah.
But something of this like movement of rehabilitation of Pontius Pilate over the ages,
yeah.
even to the point of declaring him something of a saint,
yeah.
which was like shocking to me.
Totally.
I just didn't know that because I do systematic theology and so I don't study historical things. But tell us a little bit about that, because I'm guessing other people would be shocked by that too.
Yeah, that's right. So in some Christian communions like the Ethiopian Orthodox and sometimes the Coptic Orthodox, Pilate is considered a saint. His wife is considered a saint.
Mm.
And part of it is that there are kind of patristic references to Pilate's desire to not, you know, crucify Jesus, and this kind of grows up into a full-on absolution.
Mm.
You know, you see a kind of, you can read, for instance, the Passion account in the Gospel of John, where Pilate seems to have some real hesitation mm-hmm. about what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, he constantly, you know, he says over and over again that he can't find fault in this man, and he's going kind of out to the crowd, and then back to Jesus, and out to the crowd, back to Jesus, and you know, he scourges him, and then puts Jesus in front of the crowd, seemingly to kind of hope that this will be enough. It's not enough. They still shout crucify. So you can kind of read in the Gospel of John already an attempt at showing that, you know, Pilate was not a kind of cutthroat or wasn't doing this willy-nilly or whatever. But then, yeah, I mean, Tertullian, another one of these Latin Christian authors in the third century says, yeah, that, you know, he had converted and had kind of put on the mind of Christ or something like that.
I can't remember
the exact verbiage. Unfortunately, though, it nearly always comes with greater blame on the Jews.
Absolutely. Right. Right. If you exculpate Pontius, this is who it leaves.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And so that's the other kind of undercurrent that you see. So on the one hand, I think that they're reading, this hesitation and John's gospel. You know, the question, what is truth, is sometimes from Pilate is sometimes read as kind of sarcastic. I read it as sincere. And so I think they're picking up rightly on that. Then they're picking up, I think, wrongly on this idea that the Jews in any of the Gospels represents a kind of monolithic group who had it out for Jesus. And so the fathers would use the absolution, some of them would use the absolution of Pilate as a means of laying greater blame at the feet of Jews. And Jewish and Christian relations in antiquity were not great always.
Understatement.
Exactly. Sometimes in some places it was better, and in other places it was far worse. I don't know about the kind of the history of the Ethiopian Orthodox So it's a really interesting kind of thing to find artwork or depictions of, you know, Saint Pontius Pilate.
That is just shocking. I've never seen that.
Yeah,
but just shocking. Well, I'm glad that you told me about it. So if I do see it, I won't be like, what, you know, what is going on here? I'll understand it a little bit better. So, all right, Josh, we better let you get back to actually writing this book and not talking about it. Yeah, does it have a title, by the way?
Yeah.
Working title?
The title is The Apostles' Creed, A Historical and Theological Introduction. Mm. And it's under contract with Catholic University of America Press.
Great.
So it will be done this year and hopefully out next.
You said it.
Yep.
Now you have to do it.
Yeah, from my lips to God's ears. Here we go.
That's right. That's right. All right, Josh. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for joining us on Church Life today.
The National Catholic Educational Association 2024 convention is coming up soon. All Catholic school educators, administrators, and leaders are welcome to join us in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on April 2nd through 4th, 2024 for Together in Pittsburgh, Connections, Commitment, and Community. The largest Catholic education convention has it all, with breakout sessions, liturgies, special events, and a keynote by Steve Angrisano. Register using the link in the show notes. We can't wait to welcome you to Pittsburgh. This has been a production of OSV Podcasts. To learn more, visit osvpodcasts.com.